everyone. So I'm Sarah Lacey. That is a lot of cameras. And if you don't know who this guy is, you should really leave and give your seat to someone in the overflow room. This is, of course, Mark Zuckerberg from Facebook.
Oh, thank you.
I'm in a lucky position. I'm the reporter who actually gets to ask him every obnoxious question. So, you know, I actually feel like most of the stuff that's been written about Facebook since the news, since the platform launch, has been all corporate stuff. It's been year 23, it's been $15 billion valuation. Yeah, the core of why you guys are doing so well is the site itself. And I think a lot of people have a lot of misunderstandings about the site itself, and it's something we've talked about in the past. So to start up, you know, I just want you to talk a little bit about the role Facebook is playing in the world now and how that's evolved since it was just your Harvard project.
Sure. Actually, that's a great first place to start. I tend to agree that a lot of the focus has been on things that we as a company aren't necessarily as focused on. And the thing that we are trying to do at Facebook is just help people connect and communicate more efficiently. And we think that this both has very subtle effects on individuals in terms of helping them build more trusting and empathy relationships and enrich their lives. And it also has really broad macro effects when you take the sum of these connections and you boil them up to something that's much more broad. And, you know, one example of this more recently is, you know, we just launched internationally and it was always kind of available for people to use, but it was only in English until about a month ago. And we launched in Spanish for the first time on February 11th. And
let's hear it for Spain. Sorry, Mark.
So one of the countries that has really taken off and has a significant Facebook population since we launched in Spanish is Colombia. And this is actually really notable because there were a few people who were using it in English before, and then a ton of people started signing up for it in Spanish once it was available. And the first thing that people started doing was they started using the site to organize, communicate, and revolt against the guerrilla armies that were in Colombia.
So, you know, I know, let me interrupt you for a second. So I know a lot of how the site has evolved has really been true to your original vision and original mission. Did you ever think people would be using Facebook to revolt against the government in Colombia?
Well, no. So it's very hard to predict these things. But I think since the beginning, we've kind of had the sense that if we could just help people communicate more efficiently, that would have very profound effects. I mean, it helps people on this micro level of just helping them cultivate more personal, more trusting and empathy relationships with the people around them. And that's a really important thing, you know, getting empathy into the world as it becomes an increasingly complex place. But at a broader level, if you add up all of those connections, you actually get some very profound effects. And I think what's happening in Colombia is one example. And I mean, I wouldn't have predicted that would have happened, but I think it makes sense. Right?
What is it about Facebook, though? Because, I mean, the internet is considered very open. The internet's been connecting people and enabling communication. Why did they need something like Facebook in order to enable this?
Well, the internet is a great platform on top of which to build these things. Mm-hmm. And there need to be specific tools that allow people to communicate very efficiently. And we're not the only ones doing that. A lot of people are doing things like this, but a lot of people are using our tools, and especially in places like Colombia, and they're using it to do these types of things and just communicate really efficiently with people around them. And I mean, there are different ways that people can communicate and make these connections. People do that in real life all the time. And a lot of what we're doing on Facebook, we're not trying to build new communities. What we're trying to do is help people communicate with the people that they already would have, just more effectively. Extend that empathy and extend those relationships and be able to keep in touch with more people at the same time, absorb more information, and communicate better. So that's really what we're trying to do.
So the other day when we were talking, you were telling me this story about Facebook and terrorism, which I think is interesting. So I want you to talk about that because it's another example of this sort of efficient platform that you've built being used. I mean, like you said, it's the real world things just playing out on the web, but other people's real world experience is so different than ours. It's surreal to think about some of these stories. And I think that's a good one.
Yeah. So I heard the story a few months ago that's absolutely unbelievable. Facebook has a relatively large population in Lebanon. And, you know, at this point, I think people understand or have studied terrorism enough and fundamentalism to understand that it doesn't come from a deep hatred of anyone, right, a deep hatred of America or innate hatred of anyone. It comes from just a lack of connectedness
guys,
and a lack of communication.
Everyone could just try to scoot in.
A lack of empathy and
understanding. We've got a lot more people still coming in. And we also have an overflow
and,
in room six on
a lot of the people,
and
I mean,
the
I heard
on
the story
fourth floor.
Some youths
Thanks.
In Lebanon who are growing up and...
Probably not much younger than you.
Not that much younger than me. and they're relatively poor. And they're growing up and they spend a lot of time with their imam, their local religious leader. And they're basically spending a lot of time at like studying under this person because a lot of it is because they believe in their religion. A lot of it is just because that institution is providing them with free food, free uniforms, free clothing. And because they don't really have other options. But I mean, the people spend a lot of time doing that. And then on the side, they'll also just go out with their friends and drink on Friday night and try to meet girls and do all the things that you and I would think would be normal things out here in the West. And then during the week, they're studying with their imams. Many of them are very peaceful. Some of them are extremist, and some of them take pictures with their students holding guns with the religious leader. And you know, now because of Facebook, I mean, I heard a story a few months ago where people were able to keep connections with a bunch of their friends who they'd met, who went off to Europe, went off to other places, and they were able to keep an understanding and broaden their horizon, their understanding of what was going on in the world, and that just increased the options that they had and made it so that they just had a broader understanding and more empathy for what was out there in the world. And that really changed their outlook on a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
So it's amazing that there are people who are at a point in their life where they're basically deciding.
They're at a crossroads.
Yeah. Am I going to grow up to be a terrorist?
Yeah.
Or am I going to grow up to these other things? And it's really profound, right? And we're not the only ones who are doing this. I mean, we're just part of this massive trend that's going on the internet today with a lot of developers, a lot of artists or different people who are just helping people communicate. And,
right.
But I mean, it's just very profound what can happen if you can enable these types of connections.
So beyond just enabling it, since you have such a platform, are there things that you're doing sort of proactively to do good in the world, to take advantage of it? As a company? I mean, any like, well, I guess not. No, he's just interested in himself. And
yeah.
$15 million.
Well, I mean, I think that what we're doing as a mission is a very
right.
important thing, right?
Right.
So helping people communicate more efficiently.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's interesting when you think about a lot of the things that people think about is...
That was such a Leslie Stahl moment. What?
Thanks.
Is that a question?
Thanks.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Back to your train of thought.
So you can get away with stuff like this.
Well, I have to say, the first time I ever interviewed Mark, it was so awkward. We'll get back to you in a minute. We were in a conference room in Facebook, and I had talked to him on the phone before, but never met him in person. When I talked to him on the phone, he was really ballsy and out there, and was just like really like. So I was expecting this like brash punk like outspoken kid, and he was so nervous. He was wearing a white T-shirt, and it was sopping wet by the end of the interview. He sweat through his shirt, and I just kept trying to ask broader and broader questions, hoping something would just spur it and he would just open up and start talking. And I kept getting broader and broader and he was getting more and more frustrated. And finally I asked him something, I don't remember what it was, and he just was like, he kind of does this thing, you'll see it. He goes, like a bird. And he said, I don't know how to answer that. That's too broad. And I just like put down my notebook and I was like, Mark, I'm trying to get you to say more than two words. I don't care what you say, just say more than two words. And you remember what you said?
No.
He said, that's really hard. And I said, three words. Way to go.
Yeah.
But back to you. So
it's a good
when I
story.
Saw 60 Minutes, I was like, I feel you, Leslie Stahl. I've been there.
So what was the question?
About changing the world. Your mission. The mission you guys are on. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, we're just talking about helping people communicate more efficiently and make these connections and how... That's a pretty important thing. So you were asking about philanthropy.
Yes.
Right? And I mean, there are a lot of really big issues with the world that need to be solved. And as a company, what we're trying to do is basically build an infrastructure on top of which to solve some of these problems. A little while ago, I was having a conversation with someone who was very involved in the One campaign. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this. It's basically this large organization that their goal is to help fight poverty, right, and raise money and awareness for different countries that have extreme poverty. And one of the ways that they go about this and one of the ways that they talk about it is they want to build an organization that has enough political clout to really affect the way that legislation happens in this country and in other countries so that they can achieve their ends. And they compare it to the NRA in a lot of ways, because the NRA has built this incredibly powerful organization for gun rights, and it's very influential, and if you get in their way, then that really affects you. And so their goal is to build an organization that was that powerful, but for poverty. And, you know, so I heard the story where my friend was telling me that there was a bill that was being voted on in terms of allowing some kind of aid in some specific country in Africa. And there was a congressman, I think it was in Illinois, who thought that his constituents wouldn't want him to vote on the bill because they wanted the taxpayer money to be focused locally. So he voted no on the bill. And then he went and he was giving a speech to some of his local constituents, and he said, you know, I will make sure that none of your taxpayer money ever leaves this country. And, you know, a lot of the people just disagreed with that. They thought, you know, no, we really think that we need to be fighting poverty here,
yeah.
Right? So what the one campaign did was that they went and they organized support and they found all the people that were against that in this local area, mm-hmm. and they protested. So everywhere where this congressman went for a week, when he went to church, right, with his kids, there were people outside protesting. When he went to work in his office, mm-hmm. there were people outside protesting. When he went home, to the extent that they could, there were people outside protesting.
Mm-hmm.
And when he went to drop off his kids at school, people protesting. And within a week, he was basically like, look, I guess I got this wrong, right? You guys clearly want to support this, right? Poverty is an important issue for you.
Uh-huh.
But the thing that was actually most striking to me about that is, why does there need to be a big organization in order to channel people's voices?
Right.
Right. So, I mean, we're at a point now with the internet and with a lot of these applications mm-hmm. where communication should be efficient enough
right.
that these people should be able to have a voice, and what issues are important to people should be able to be heard without having a large organization with millions of people that's been organized and has raised millions of dollars mm-hmm. in order to fight us for a specific cause.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's an interesting thing, because the world is increasingly complex, and this isn't the only issue out there. There are a ton of issues. And, you know, the U.S. isn't necessarily in the position that it was before just to be able to tell a lot of people in the world what they should be doing.
Right.
And it's increasingly the case that for things like this to work, there needs to be a solid base for people to communicate that's built not top-down through legislation by countries, but built bottom-up by people like us, mm-hmm. right, building applications. And one of them is Facebook, but I mean, a lot of them are also being built by a lot of you guys. And I think that that's just a really important trend in the world. So, I mean, when you ask about philanthropy, at this point in our development, you know, we're running the business around break-even, right? So we're not throwing off a ton of money. And what we're really trying to do is we're focusing on building this infrastructure on top of which people can communicate and work on these things.
Well, you know, one thing that I've observed, when you compare and contrast sort of Web 1.0 and 2.0, if you will, I bet fewer big public companies come out of the 2.0 wave, but I think these companies have far bigger social impact than buying a book online or being able to sell stuff on eBay. I mean, all of these companies, because they're so focused on community and communication and empowering people, whether it's blogging, you know, whether it's what you guys are doing, you know, whatever, it has a much richer impact on people's lives. And I think that's where people talk about these sites being addictive.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the stuff that was in the first wave was actually really interesting, too. But
when you were five.
When I was five, thanks. Way to bring it back to that.
All right, so I want to talk about some other stuff, but just since you touched on international, I know that you guys are launching France tonight, right?
Yeah, way to get that news before me.
Oh, yeah, Brandy said to prompt you to say that. Sorry. Talk about France. Are you doing something tonight?
Apparently. Yeah, we launched in Spanish about a month ago. We launched in German, last week, and we're launching in French tonight.
So, you know, any shout out for France? So one thing that I've observed is a lot of web companies have a hard time scaling, not only out of their kind of niche that's very affiliated with them, but internationally has been a really hard thing. You guys seem to have navigated it better than most. Why do you Is there some secret to that? Is it just because you guys are trying to be an efficient platform and not a media property or?
Well, I think that the need that we're tapping into is a universal need. So everyone has relationships. Everyone needs to communicate with people, and connecting is just a fundamental human thing. So even, you know, from the beginning when I just launched it at Harvard, mm-hmm. and a lot of people thought that it was a college thing for a long time, I mean, we were always very focused as a company on, yeah. you know, we're helping people communicate efficiently, we're helping people connect, that's a universal thing.
Yeah.
There can be a time where this or something else like it is used by every single person in the world. Right? And I don't know if Facebook yeah. is going to be that thing, but I think yeah. that there is going to be some platform that enables this.
Well, speaking of needs, you guys need to make money because you're very hyped, you have all these people, you've got this huge valuation, so I want to talk about ad stuff.
Go for it.
Is that cool? I kind of cut you off.
You don't need to ask my permission on these things. Well, I'm kind of up here on this platform.
You kind of had this hurt look, like, I was talking. Did you want to finish your thought?
No, go for it.
Okay. So, first of all, before we even talk about what this great innovation you guys are going to come up with and all that, let's talk about the ad deal with Microsoft. There's a sense that Google, Microsoft have been going around buying up this inventory in sort of an arms race, and it's because they're such big companies, it doesn't hurt them to overpay for it. But there's a sense that they're not making money off these deals because sites like Facebook, MySpace, Dig, et cetera, aren't really monetizable. And there's been debate on that. What can you tell us about how the Microsoft deal is going? Do they feel they're getting their money's worth?
Well, let me take a step back from that. I think what you said at the beginning of this session was actually a really important theme, I think, that a lot of people have focused on, you know, some deals that we've done, valuation, all these different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what we've talked about so far is actually at Facebook, what we think are the important things, what we're focused
right.
on all the time. Right? It's building this product, building this system that helps
right.
people communicate and connect. And everything that we do at the company, we think about through that frame, right? Because that's our mission. That's what we're trying to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And revenue growth, and we've decided that building a business is the most effective way for us to go about meeting our mission and achieving the goals that we have in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, in terms of the Microsoft relationship that we have, the way that we think about monetizing and serving our users in that way and making money is that we want the way that we make money to be in line with how people use the site. So what people do on the site is they communicate information with each other. They're constantly sharing different pieces of information. If you look at someone's profile, people always list like their favorite music, their favorite movies, different things that they're into. And a lot of that is very commercial, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that's fine. I mean, this is people expressing their identities.
Right.
And the monetization system that we're trying to build is one that's very organic with what people are already doing on the site. People are... Thank you.
We'll get to that in a second.
so we're already trying to basically help people share this type of information. And if we give people enough control over this, or like complete control, and let them share the information that they want, then that has a significant overlap with the way that we think we're going to make money on the site.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that said, there's this whole other realm of banner ads.
Right.
Right, which we haven't gotten that involved with, and Microsoft
right.
and Google have. And
the idea is you don't want to waste your time with that. You want to work on the innovative thing, so you offload it, basically,
well,
right?
Well, so we're working with them on that. And they've been a really good partner for us on that and a bunch of other things.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. just, I mean, this is what I'm trying to get at. There's a sense that, yes, you have this immediate revenue from Microsoft, which is great. But there's a sense that's not sustainable because that in itself isn't even profitable. So there's pressure on you guys to kind of crack this larger thing, or in 3 years or whenever this deal runs out, you'll have absolutely no money. So like, before we get to the larger thing, banner ads alone, are they working? Are they happy with the deal?
I think they're very happy. I mean, you'd have to talk to them about it. I mean, we're happy. They seem pretty happy. Go for it.
Can we call Ballmer? You
right now?
Yeah,
Ballmer.
Dial.
I don't, and I don't have my phone with me. But,
But
yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure that they're very happy with it. I mean, obviously, as a private company, we're not sharing stats on that.
Right.
But I think I can tell you that it's going really well
right.
for both of us.
So then let's get to what you guys are doing. I know you announced that the world of advertising was changing the most it has in 100 years or something
well,
like that.
We're part of this
year.
Larger trend that,
right.
that people are communicating more with each other. And then we think that there's a way of advertising,
uh-huh.
which is basically just people endorsing things.
Right. So how far along is Facebook into implementing this? I mean, are you guys still very early stages? Have you figured it out, or do you have the basic idea and you're trying to figure out how it works?
No, and I mean, I think when we announced that, we probably got a little ahead of ourselves and said that we had more of it figured out than we actually did. So, I mean, I view that as kind of a mistake that we made. And I think that, in general, the theme holds, that mm-hmm. what we want to do is build a system that helps people share information, and we believe that the way that people advertise on the site and endorse things is a part of that. Right? Mm-hmm. So the economic engine behind the company and the change that we're trying to make should be driven by the same type of behaviors that people are doing on the site when they're using it normally. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the way that the best monetization systems work.
Right.
So I mean, that's what we're trying to build. But I mean, but that said, I think we have a lot of change and a lot of things that we need to build before
right.
we fully get there.
And one thing that I really respect about you guys is you view this as a multi-decade process, right? Sort of building out the social graph, building out the ads that go along with it. I mean, this is not something that you're trying to solve next quarter, next year.
Yeah, this is a pretty long-term thing. I mean, these are just huge changes.
I mean,
we don't know which part of it. I mean, we're trying to push this forward, but I mean, we don't know which part of this we're going to do. I mean, a lot of you guys here are developers. Mm-hmm. I'm sure, a lot of you guys are also playing a very instrumental role in the trends that are playing out. And I mean, it's just going to be interesting to watch this unfold over the next 10, 15, 20 years.
So let's talk about Beacon.
Go for it.
WTF.
Yeah.
So first of all, tell us what you wanted to communicate with Beacon and what your vision was, and let's all have an open mind and listen. And then we'll talk a little about what you think you guys did wrong.
Sure. So I think that the primary thing that we were trying to do is, well actually, just to back up a second, in our company, Beacon isn't even a part of the ad team. It's a part of our platform team. And there's this trend where we think that these social networks and social services are going from being these large monolithic sites like Facebook.com or another large social networking site to a collection of social services, right? Which some of them are ones that we've developed, right? Which we think are important, like newsfeed, right? Or profiles, inbox, the ability for people to communicate, search for things. And then a lot of them, in an increasing number, are things that we're not developing, right? Just because we know that our DNA as a company isn't set to develop a lot of these things, and even if it were, we couldn't get to them, and other people are just more talented and have more focus in different areas. So an increasing number of the social services that are out there, what we've tried to do in order to build out this ecosystem and basically reach our goal of helping everyone connect and communicate really efficiently, is we've tried to build a platform that allows other people to build these services. And some of those are going to be inside Facebook.com, and that's a lot of the development that's going on today. And an increasing amount of that is going to be outside of Facebook.com, right, in the rest of the web, having access to people's information as they want to share it, being able to push information back to their friends as people want to share and do that. And that's just going to be an increasingly important part of the ecosystem. So what we were trying to do with Beacon was really just take the first step mm-hmm. into letting people take actions in other parts of the web mm-hmm. and share those back with their friends on Facebook. It also ties into the ad system in the
right.
way that I was just talking about, and that what we want to do with our ad system is have something that fits very organically with what people are doing on the site. People are sharing information, and if those can be used as mm-hmm. endorsements that people agree to, then that could be a very effective ad system, right? I mean, the performance of those ads, because they're trusted, right? It's someone who you care about actually
right.
Said that they wanted to do something. I mean, it's way better, and that's just because that's what people are coming to the site to do. They're coming to learn about what's going on with their friends and communicate. But we view it as a very important trend in the world for these social services to distribute out and for an increasing amount of this to happen outside of our walls, right, outside of Facebook.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what the first iteration of Beacon was trying to get at.
Right.
And I think we made a lot of mistakes, both in terms of how we communicated it and just some interface things. We probably didn't make it as clear as we should have. And we're learning as a company, right? I mean,
right.
we're relatively new still and trying to figure a lot of this stuff out.
Well, I think it's interesting to compare and contrast what happened with Beacon and what happened with the newsfeed, because I think the uproar over the newsfeed was a much bigger thing that actually threatened your company and threatened the community than the Beacon thing. I mean, the Beacon thing, let's face it, it was a really small percentage of users that were upset about it. I use Facebook a lot, and I've seen one Beacon thing. It's not something that really impacts your experience that much, whereas the newsfeed people got really upset. But in both cases, there were cases where it was something that you felt was so integral to the site and so integral to the vision that had something about privacy, that concerned people about privacy. I mean, is there something about this bigger vision of where Facebook's going that naturally conflicts with privacy? Is this something that's going to keep cropping up for you guys?
Well, the thing that's really important is that we need to give people complete control over their information. Right? People need to be able to say exactly who they want to share each piece of information that they're sharing, who they want to share that with. So, and I think that actually enables a lot more sharing. So, for example, cell phone numbers, right?
Uh-huh.
I think the most recent stat is something like 20 or 25% of people on Facebook have their cell phone number shared. And the reason why they're able to do that is because they can say, I only want to share this with my friends. Right? If I had to share it with 60 million people, then you wouldn't want to do that. Mm-hmm. So actually giving people very granular control over who they share information with mm-hmm. actually allows those connection and that communication to take place.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a theme that's very broadly applicable across the whole product. And the more control and the more granular control that we can give people, the more information that people are going to be able to share, and the more we're going to be able to achieve our goals. And almost across the board, all the mistakes that we've made are because we didn't give people enough control.
Or you didn't communicate it. Because there are times you've had the control built in, but people didn't recognize it.
That's true, too.
I want to talk about applications a little bit because, you know, you've talked about all these sort of big, substantial things that Facebook is doing. And obviously the moment when you guys opened up the platform was what really transformed the company. But a lot of people criticize the application ecosystem because they say it's very frivolous. They aren't things that are really that engaging. You know, can anyone really build a business off of these? What tweaks are you guys doing to that to make more? Is it just a matter of, you know, time and this ecosystem evolving? Are we going to see real substantive?
Well, there are pretty big changes underway with the system now, and just in terms of the incentives, right? I mean, I think at Facebook we believe that people are basically fundamentally good, right? Mm-hmm. And that people aren't trying to game a system inherently, and that basically the applications that you get are a product of the incentive structure that you set up, right? So
yeah.
Right now, what we've done is we've basically said that we have some distribution channels. You can send requests to people, you can send notifications, you can get people to add your profile and put it, get a box in their profile, and we allow you to do everything that you want up to a point. And if you pass a point where people say that you're too spammy, then you basically, you get filtered.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's just a single threshold. And what that behavior incentivizes people to do is get as close to that line as possible and basically be very spammy
mm-hmm.
as you can without getting over the line.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, these systems are all about trust.
Right.
Right? So if we can make it so that which is the current trend that in what we're moving towards, and we've already rolled out a bunch of this with platform. What we're trying to do is make it so that if you're sending requests to people and they accept your requests, the more that people accept your requests, the more requests you're able to send. Right? And the more notifications the more that people click on your notifications and find them valuable, and the more people find your feed stories valuable, the ones that you're publishing, then the more of those you're going to be able to publish.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually going to try to align the system so that the applications which are producing the most trustworthy, useful information that people actually like are the ones that are able to publish the most and request the most in the system.
Mm-hmm.
So we're fundamentally changing the incentive structure like that. So it's going from being a set of rules to just this very trust-based system and reacting
right.
to what users are
Is
liking.
That a fine line, though, in keeping the platform still very open and setting rules or more and more rules around who gets to do what?
Well, in one way, it's setting less rules, right? It's uh-huh. letting the community, the base of Facebook users say, okay, this application is being too aggressive in how it's trying to promote itself, therefore it needs to dial itself down,
mm-hmm.
right? So I actually think it's more laissez-faire, right? We're gonna
uh-huh.
be setting less of these policies ourselves.
Okay. So just real quick, I want to ask you about the rumors in the Financial Times that you guys are launching some iTunes killer, you're negotiating with labels, you're gonna be the next music mogul. What's really going on?
I don't know. no, so I mean, I think what's going on there is we talk to a lot of companies all the time,
uh-huh.
right, about a lot of different things. And I mean, there are music applications on Facebook. There are great music applications. That's traditionally been a vertical that we haven't really gone after at all.
Right.
Right? I mean, we built a photos application that a lot of people use. We built a video application that some people use. Music is not something that we really touched on a lot. And one of the great things was as soon as we opened up Facebook platform,
mm-hmm.
there were a lot of developers who filled that niche. So we don't even need to, right? I mean, there are millions of people on Facebook who use applications like iLike and other music applications, which are excellent applications which fill that void.
Right.
Right. So I mean, as a company, we're out and we're talking to different companies in the space because building relationships and
mm-hmm.
who knows how we'll work together in the future. But at this point, I can say that I don't think that that's and we have nothing to talk about right now.
Okay. Is that something that is appealing to you, though, building a business like that? Is it something that seems to make sense on Facebook?
Well, I mean, what we're really trying to do is just build this base. I mean, we're trying to help people communicate and connect really efficiently. Mm-hmm. And we think that the way to do that is we're going to build some of these applications ourselves, and then we're going to build a developer platform that allows developers to build the rest of them, some inside Facebook and an increasing amount outside of Facebook. And that's basically the strategy that we're following at this point, and mm-hmm. that's how we think that we're going to have the best chance of meeting our goal.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I just want to ask, because I'm totally confused on our signals. How are we doing that? Oh, really? Oh, wow. I thought that was the 45-minute hand sign, and I was like, time's flying.
So you ran out of questions?
No, dear God, no. You know me better than that. I think one time I went and interviewed Mark for my book that's coming out that Mark and his story is a major part of. It's pre-sale on Amazon. I went over after this thing they call the hackathon at Facebook, and the place was disgusting. There was like pizza on the floor. There was just a whole pile of Wii bongos. It was like a tornado had come through. And Mark was half asleep, and I kept the poor guy there for about 6 hours asking him questions. So compared to that, you'll get off easy today. So according to Forbes, you are the youngest billionaire ever on their list.
See, we're just not that focused on stuff like that.
So, obviously this is because the $15 billion valuation, the famous $15 billion valuation. Okay, I love Facebook. I use it all the time. But come on, you don't actually think the company's worth $15 billion at this point, do you?
I mean, I just don't think we're thinking about that, right? I mean,
so take us through what you were thinking about in doing that deal.
Well, what we're thinking about is, you know, we want to get as little dilution as possible and raise money on the most favorable terms. And we wanted we're building this relationship with Microsoft, and we have this ad relationship. We're doing several other things, and they wanted to buy a piece of the company. So we just discussed this, and this is what made sense. Mm-hmm. But I mean, as a company, what we're focused on is just not necessarily like all the financial information. Right, so I mean, it's all the themes that we're talking about today, right? In terms of helping people communicate more efficiently, building this developer platform, helping mm-hmm. people map out who their friends are, and in order to help them communicate very effectively, mm-hmm. and in order to do that, the way that we've decided is going to be the most effective is for us to just go and build a business, mm-hmm. right? Because that allows us to attract a lot of the most talented people and build this ecosystem, and that's how we think we're going to reach our goals.
But in business terms, is having a valuation like that a negative? I mean, I would think it brings out a certain kind of person who wants to work at Facebook. It brings out, you know, a certain element in the Valley that you've kind of been crowned the next Google, maybe prematurely, and now you've got to live up to this really high mark.
Yeah, I mean, the high expectations are
tough. I
didn't
mean Mark is a double entendre there, by the way, but it worked. But
the high expectations are tough. But I think in general, it adds a lot of positive things. But I mean, you're right. I mean, the recruiting is one thing that's really important. I mean, we want people to be joining the company because they believe in what we're trying to do and want to be a part of that, whether it's building these types of monetization systems or building this developer platform or helping people map out who their friends are. And helping them communicate with people by building different types of applications, or even just helping communicate the story around what we're trying to get done, mm-hmm. right? Because I don't think that we've done that enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, having such a focus on money in the business has been tough for us because it can self-select for people who just care too much about that. Right? And that's not where we are as a company. So that's why we've gone out and said, you know, we're not planning on going public anytime soon.
Right.
Right. Because we don't want people to self-select for people who want to join the company because they think that they're going to make money very quickly. And we think that if we do well, then what we're doing can align with building a good business, and that's great.
Right.
And you know, I mean, the value that the company ends up being worth will hopefully be relatively aligned and similar to the value that we're creating in the world in terms mm-hmm. of the platforms that we build. Mm-hmm. But revenue and value of the company are a trailing indicator of the value that you're building.
Right.
And that's what we need to focus on.
Yeah. I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning. I mean, everyone talks about this phenomenon around it, but it's ultimately the site itself and all of these roles it's playing in these different communities. That's the core of it. If it wasn't doing that, none of this other stuff would be happening.
Mm-hmm.
So people, well, real quick, back to this whole thing about not wanting to go public. or get bought. I mean, there, it, for such a long time up until that Microsoft deal, it was such a topic of conversation. And it was like to the point, I'm not even at Facebook, and I got irritated turning on CNBC every day and them talking about this imminent Facebook IPO that was going to come any moment. I mean, my sense was maybe one of the reasons you want to get a huge valuation like that is it kind of closes the door on that speculation. Like, obviously, you guys aren't going to sell anytime soon because no one's going to pay $15 billion. And you're probably not going to sell for less than your, you know, valuation. Same thing with going public. Is that a side benefit?
Is which a side benefit? Taking that, money at that value?
Yeah, yeah, at that high.
I mean, I just think that we're not, because we're not making that many decisions based on that, right? I mean, it's not even that we're opposed to going public or having an IPO. At some point, we may do that. We'll probably do that at some point. But
I guess my point is that it throws down the gauntlet that, like, that we're building something so big and this is where we are now. Don't even talk to us about it.
Well, but it's not even about necessarily the value. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, for IPO, for example, I mean, it's not that we don't want to do it, it's just that we're not focused on it. Right? For a lot of companies, that's the goal, right? We do a certain set of things, then we can go public. And for us, that's not the goal. And we just want to be clear with anyone who's potentially going to join mm-hmm. the company or interact with us that's really not what we're trying to go for. I mean, we had a similar thing, I guess it was in 06 when Yahoo was trying to buy the company,
uh-huh.
right? And they offered us $1 billion, which was really a lot at the time, right? I mean, it's like a huge amount of money, right?
a lot for people who aren't Facebook.
And the thing is that we weren't really. I mean, part of it was we were thinking about just okay, perhaps the company could grow to be worth more than that. But
right.
But I mean, but the primary analysis that we were doing wasn't that. Okay, we're here now. Are we worth $1 billion? If we do this, then can we get to be worth more than $1 billion? Is this the correct ROI thing to do?
Mm-hmm.
It was really more like we got everyone together and we said, okay, we think that we might have a chance here to build a platform that fundamentally changes the way that people can connect and communicate.
Mm-hmm.
How many times in your life do you get a chance to do that?
Right.
Zero or one.
Right.
Right? So, I mean, we just decided we have to go for it, right?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people here are making similar decisions, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I just think that that's how we're thinking about it.
You know, Jim Breyer, who's on your board, he said at the time when you guys were going through the Yahoo thing that he realized that you were an entrepreneur who ran your business by sort of your gut feeling and your instinct and your heart, but you equally ran it through just sheer analytical, like, thinking things out, and that when you were thinking about that deal, both told you it was a bad deal.
Okay.
I mean, you're saying we all got together and talked about it, but let's be honest, you did not want to do that deal, and it's very much, it's still very much your company. I mean, have a lot of control.
Well, a lot of the people at the company didn't want to do the deal.
Really?
Yes.
That's not the word on the street. The word on the street in Silicon Valley is people had stock options and were looking at this, and they were like,
some people didn't want to do it. Some people wanted to do it, but a lot of people didn't want to do it.
Have you gotten rid of those people who wanted to do it? Have you cleaned
out? We've made some management changes.
Well, while we're on the subject of management changes, you have had somewhat of a revolving door in some positions. And one thing that I've observed just from seeing you, I think some people think you're a know-it-all kid who thinks he knows everything about being CEO, and you're very much not. I think you know what you're good at. You know where you need help, and you're very willing to bring people in and listen to them. But if you don't like the way they go, they don't tend to stick around. Would you say that's fair?
I don't know. I think there are so many things that are just new that,
uh-huh.
that I don't have any experience with that really rely on the people on our team to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think a lot of it is just about expectations and what people are trying to get out of it. So, I mean,
mm-hmm.
For example, with the Yahoo thing, I think there were a lot of people, or there were a set of people at the company who joined when it was way smaller, for whom if they could sell the company for $1 billion,
mm-hmm.
that would have been basically achieved a lot of their goals for having joined the company.
Excel's stretch goal was $750 million.
See, how do you know all the stuff that I don't even know?
I wrote a book about you. You should read it.
Well, it's not out yet.
A lot. So yes, for other people that would be a huge success.
But I mean, but for the people who are really focused on building something for the long term and building uh-huh. this type of platform, I think that that, I mean, most of the people who started off at the company are still around, right? Huh. And I mean, for the growth that we've gone through, I think that the amount of change that we've had isn't that extreme.
Mm-hmm. I think it's good that you fire people when they don't mesh. I think more people should do that. I mean, that's one of the biggest problems with a lot of startups is people feel they're friends with people, and I think it's actually strength.
Okay.
Anyone you want to fire? There's space for people out there. You want to just... let's talk about Cheryl, since we're talking about management.
Sure.
So she's been called the token grown-up, and one thing I think that's an important distinction is typically when grown-ups get brought into startups, it's because their investors say you need a grown-up, and this... She was very much someone you wanted to hire. I mean, that was not the situation here, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think we discuss how we're going to involve the company with the board and with the management. So, I mean, it is probably more of a group decision than as it's been characterized. But I mean, Cheryl's amazing, right? I mean, we've been looking for someone who can help us scale our operations and help scale the company globally. I mean, right now, we just passed this mark where we have 500 employees now. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's crazy, right? And it's growing really quickly. So, I mean, having someone who can help us scale is just going to be an incredibly important thing for the coming years.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I just feel really lucky to have her.
Mm-hmm. How do you think she's going to navigate, I'm sorry, I'm a woman, so I have to ask, being a woman in that environment, because it's a very male-dominated environment, and there aren't a lot of women in high leadership roles in Silicon Valley.
Well, I think she has a good track record of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, she has great relationships with all the people who are
right.
at the company. I mean, a big part of the process of having her join the company is just having her meet all these people. And I mean, I don't think that that'll be an issue.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you mentioned the other day that you also now put Matt Kohler, who's been at the company a long time, in charge of product. It's the first time you haven't been in charge of product.
Well, we're building a product management organization now,
uh-huh.
and I mean that's a really important thing for the company to scale as well, right? So I mean, I think. As the company scales, we just need to build out different groups and different teams and help the people who are in different roles at the company grow and do a better job and learn how to do their roles better. And,
mm-hmm.
and Matt Kohler has been a longtime executive at the company. He's been here for, I think, it's maybe more than 3 years at this point. And so we've only been around for 4 years. And he's actually helped us build a lot of different parts of the company. So, I mean, he was early in sales and marketing. Most
right.
recently, he helped out with HR and recruiting. And now he's helping us build our product management team. And I think that's a pretty interesting step for us because
uh-huh.
a lot of what we're just trying to do is help scale the company in a really effective way because
mm-hmm.
the goals that we have are pretty broad, right? I mean, we're trying to build this platform that can support, and I think right now we have over 200,000 developers. And I mean, that's meaningful, right? And we're trying to build a great service for people to build the applications on top of that
right.
people can communicate through. So, I mean, having that type of scale in the organization, having a guy like Matt Kohler be able to scale and run the product management group, and having a woman like Cheryl be able to run the business operations and scale that and help us scale globally, I think are just going to be really important things for us to do in the next year.
Is it hard for you to step back from product management and let... I mean, because you're effectively being more the CEO now than you've been before, right?
Well, CEO is probably a more full-time thing than I admitted before.
Is it hard for you? Because you'd probably rather be working on the product, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think just because we have a product management organization doesn't mean that I won't be involved or that other people who aren't in that organization won't be involved in this stuff. And we have a very mm-hmm. collaborative culture where and all the engineers are working on these types of things, people in marketing are, et cetera. So I think what Kohler's going to do is he's just going to bring some more scale to the organization and help organize it a little bit better.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely an interesting time for us.
Well, there's always talk about whether or not you should stay CEO, but what about why do you want to be CEO? I mean, so many people who are founders and sort of visionary people and, you know, that sort of technical background hate the job of CEO. Like, Marc Andreessen would never be CEO in his life. You know, there's, you know, Kevin Rose, not CEO of Digg. I don't think anyone even reports to him. I mean, do you do it because you feel you want that level of control over what you're trying to build? Or is there something about being CEO you actually love?
Well, I think what the CEO does is kind of sets the tone for the organization and sets the goal of what you're trying to build. Right? So what's important to me is building this system that we've talked about today to really just help people communicate and connect.
Mm-hmm.
And being in that role is is a good way to make sure that the organization focuses on that in its product development, in its communications, in the narrative that we're telling, in how we have our privacy policy set, and how we can and how we evolve that and shape that dialogue, and in terms of the developer platform that we build, in terms of the advertiser systems that we build, in terms of how we scale our operations, technical and business. And I think that that's just, that's a really important thing. And as the organization grows, it's just increasingly important just to help people keep their eye on what's actually important. And what's important is that goal. Right. So I think as a CEO, that's a lot of what I'm doing.
One thing that's interesting to me, when I was at Business Week covering you guys and other Web 2.0 companies, it was hard because everyone wants to write about Web 2.0 using Facebook as the example. And since you guys did the Excel deal and had a close to 100 million valuation, you've been an outlier from everything else that's going on. I mean, I think you guys are very distinct from the rest of the Web 2.0 world. And, you know, one way is that you'd consider yourself a technology company and not a media company, and have drawn distinction with MySpace. Another is you don't consider yourself sort of this company that leverages one big community. Can you talk a little bit more about some of those distinctions?
Well, I mean, in terms of technology company is just a very important thing for the culture of the company. So, I mean, there are a lot of parts of the company that aren't technical. But what we've tried to do is hire a leadership team that is largely technical. So, for example, the person who's running marketing for us, Chamath Palihapitiya, has a technical background. Gideon Yu, our CFO, has a technical background. He was an engineer in school. And I think that having a technical background and an empathy towards that is what allows us to have pervasive in our culture empathy for developers, right? And it allows us to build this platform because we really believe that the way that we're going to reach our goals isn't by building all these sets of applications ourselves for people to use to share information, but for us to help a lot of other people build companies and build ways that people can share information to help them connect and communicate. So I think being technical is just a very fundamental part of our company. In terms of community, I think that a lot of people say that we're a community and that there are different networks on the site, whether it's a company or a high school or a city or whatever it is, that are different communities. But I mean, we think about it more as a very personal thing. Like for each individual, it's not about how they fit into that community necessarily, although that helps and is a proxy for privacy settings and things like that in a lot of cases. What the site is really doing is just, it's a very personal utility that's helping people maintain their relationships and helping people communicate.
Can I tell people about the books we were talking about last night? Will that embarrass you?
Oh.
About your...
Go for it.
Okay. So, not that I've already brought it up. So, one thing a lot of people don't know about Mark, and you still do this, right? So this is one of the first couple times I met him, I saw, he has these sort of bound books that he painstakingly writes out, like everything he's thinking of and all his ideas for the site and where it's going. And if you actually go back and look at them over 4 years, three, four?
Sure.
You can actually see everything of like how this is played out. And what I find fascinating about this is that, first of all, you're a computer guy and you do this all longhand on paper. Second being that it's so many frequently startups just kind of bob and weave through things. And this sense of like this sort of vision that you've had all along. I mean, newsfeed was something that you wanted early, very early on. It wasn't just when people were on the site and you thought, oh, this would be a good way. Right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean,
So Leslie Stahl moment. So the point.
You have to ask questions.
Anyone who's watched, wow. Is this anti-Mia Khan? Anyone who's watched my show, Tech Ticker on Yahoo Finance, has seen me throw a full glass of water on Michael Arrington, so I would just warn you. I'm getting to the question. So, the fact that we see the site and it's how it's evolved over the last couple of years, how much of that has been your original vision that you've been scrawling down in books, and how much of it really has been seeing how people use the site and reacting to it?
Well, I mean, a lot of it are really broad ideas, right?
Uh-huh.
To make a decision that we're going to build this developer platform that and that the majority of the applications that people are going to use aren't going to be ones that we've developed ourselves, but are ones that the third parties and other people are building.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really high-level concept, right? So I think that's been a pretty commonly held belief at the company for a long time, far before we actually had enough people using Facebook to make it worth having a platform for.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Newsfeed is also, it seems like a pretty good idea in theory. And a lot of a lot of the stuff that actually gets built, there are a lot of details, right? And I think people look at things like Newsfeed and they say, oh, okay, maybe that was good, maybe that wasn't good, or platform, maybe that was good, maybe that wasn't good. But a lot of times, I think this might be a more pervasive cultural thing here, people chalk most of it up to the original idea.
Mm-hmm.
But the vast majority of the work that went into that wasn't done by me writing in a book. It was done by people at Facebook and you know, all the people who were there who were actually building these things, right? And who were working on it for weeks and months, right? So I think a lot of my job is just to help communicate what we're trying to do and help people focus. But I really wouldn't want to downplay the fact that it's all these other people who are actually doing all this work.
Right. Are there any of those sort of high-level directions, though, that you had written in these books that when the company got to that point, you were like, that's stupid, we're not doing that? Or is it all pretty much played out?
I don't know. Well, the part of the story that you left out is that I destroy the books.
Yes, he does destroy them. I was going to let you tell that part. He burns them. How dramatic
is that?
I didn't
burn them. You made that up.
Wait. Okay, who was sitting with us last night? Catherine Hollihan, are you in here? Did he not say last night he burns them? Seriously. All right, this is the downside of Web 2.0. Like, you try doing what I do for a living. It's not as easy as it looks. All right. Jesus. Okay. What do you want me to talk about, sir? It's your. How much time do we have left? Well, in true, let's just honor the dig style of community management and let them take over in a mob rule. I'll let you ask a couple questions. You don't get to ask one. Anyone but that guy. Okay.
I see two real major issues with this site. One, it's really hard. I mean, you have a lot of inputs for information, but there's no real way of managing or holding on to it. And the other is that I can't really control who sees what yet. I know you say that's coming, but I'm curious, do you see those as major issues, and what are you guys going to do about them?
Yeah, I mean, that's some of the most important stuff that we can do. I mean, in terms of building this framework for how other people can develop applications and how people can use the applications that we've built, it's just really important that people get as granular of control as possible to say, okay, I want to share this photo album with these people and not these people. And I think a lot of the reason why we don't have some of that stuff yet is that it's relatively complicated to build, and we're trying to balance out giving people complete control and giving people a good set of default settings so they also don't have to do a lot of work in order to set things the way that they want. But I think that's an incredibly important thing for us to do. And if we don't succeed at doing that, then privacy and trust are just like core pillars of what's going on here. And I mean, we believe that that actually giving people control of that information is what enables people to share a lot of information. So if we don't succeed at that in the next year, then that's going to be an issue for us. I agree. But I think we will.
And what about holding on to information and controlling how it's sent to us? Because it's just such an overload right now. It's like,
so do you mean things like in newsfeed?
Well, within the messaging especially, like you can't just search within your messages for something that somebody said at some point, and you can't hold on to a posted item and tag it for later use. It's really, really hard to manage all of that content when it's just flying at your head.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think there are a lot of things like that. I mean, both of the things that you just mentioned are things that I think are being worked on or will be worked on soon. I don't know when exactly they'll be out, but they're clearly very important things for us to do. And I think something that's really important to remember is that, I mean, Facebook is still relatively constrained as a company. I mean, we're trying to do a lot of different things. And this is a really important thing for us to build, but I think like things take time as well. So when we're working on it, I think we realize that it's an issue and that if we're going to succeed at our goals, we need to get there. So thank you for bringing that up. That's a good point.
I'm going to let this guy ask a question, because he hasn't heckled me.
Do you think there are so many applications that there will be a time that you have to block those applications just like MySpace did. Like it's like getting crowded over there. So what do you think about that?
Well, I think that the ideal format will be one where people can use the applications that they want to and not use the applications that they don't want to and not be bugged by the ones that they don't want to. So giving people that level of control over the information that they get and the information that they're sharing with different applications is going to be a really important thing. We also want to remove a lot of the friction that exists in platform today. So one of the issues that we see is anytime, or very frequently, if you click on something that comes from an application, you get taken to this dialogue to add an application. And I mean, we don't think that that's a great experience, so we're working on that. And so I mean, a lot of removing this friction is a really important thing for us in terms of cultivating this platform so that all you guys can build great applications. But I agree.
All right.
Hey, Mark. Other than really rough interviews, what do you think is the single biggest obstacle Facebook faces?
What the? Has this been a rough interview?
I'm not pointing fingers, and I was asking Mark.
Jesus Christ.
No, I think he's making fun of me.
No, he's making fun of me. Yeah. All right, someone like send me a message later of why exactly it was that I sucked so bad.
What is your email address?
Jesus. Go ahead.
So what was the question?
All right. The question is, what is the biggest obstacle that Facebook faces in the coming future? Single biggest obstacle.
I think a lot of it is around, it's basically around building these systems and giving people control while also building an easy product that gives people basic control over their information and privacy. I think that's an incredibly important just framework that we need to build for platform developers to be creating these applications and for people to be able to share the information that they want. So that's probably, I mean, in terms of the next year or so, that's going to be a huge thing that we're working on.
If I may ask, is this security, would you say, being the factor, or is it a loss of reputation?
Sorry.
And allowing us to kind of develop with Facebook?
I don't fully understand.
Okay. You said that allowing us and allowing that platform for the users to come in and develop with Facebook would be an obstacle with Facebook. I'm wondering if that's a security worry, concern?
No, sorry, it's about privacy and trust.
Okay. Right?
I mean, the most important thing is for us to be able to give people control and build a framework through which application developers can give people control when they're using applications that weren't built by Facebook. Because, I mean, the way that people are able to share so much information on Facebook is because they're able to control exactly who sees it. And if we can extend that to the application platform that we're building, then we think that can be a really valuable thing. But it's a necessary thing for us to do.
All right, down here. Last. Oh, okay. Well, I'm doing everything wrong. I'm sorry. Now what?
You're not doing everything wrong. Okay.
Do you think Google's pissed that you have so much data trapped inside of Facebook that used to be on the public internet?
I don't think that they get pissed. They're very nice guys.
So the question was, is Google pissed that Mark's trapping so much information on Facebook?
I'm not trapping information. No, those guys are nice.
I do think that you guys have a tension between openness and privacy. I mean, you have a lot of pressures on both sides. A lot of people are always wanting you to open things up more. And when you make steps for opening up, you get people upset with privacy. I mean, do you see this too at Loggerheads?
Not so much, because I think that there are different classes of information that people share, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, search is a really important application for being able to index all of the open information that's available in the world. And I think that there's an increasing size, or there's a class of information that we can call maybe semi-private or semi-public information, which it's not completely private. It's not only being shared with a few people at a time, like an email or something that's very private. And it's not completely open to everyone. It's being shared with maybe 1,000 people at a time or 100 people in your networks, your cell phone number, examples like that. And it's that class of information which we're really making possible to be shared now broadly with exactly the people that you want to share it. And we think that's just basically a different realm, right? So I mean, search, it won't necessarily be searching all of the semi-private information. There's a ton of completely public information that's out there. But I mean, a big part of what we're doing is we're helping the growth of people being able to share semi-private information. And I mean, and that's really not just us. I mean, it's this whole trend of what's going on the web today, and all of you guys developing applications on top of platform. So I just think that it's going to be an interesting trend to watch over the next few years.
Let's get someone from this microphone. I think this is probably the last question. Okay.
My name is Baratunde Thurston. Thanks for being here. One of my frustrations with MySpace was that they seemed to be a lot more interested in shoving television shows and ads in front of me than letting me find and communicate with my friends. Now, you've talked a lot about efficiency of communication, but to build on what Teresa was talking about with the first question, I feel like your messaging app is completely broken. Not only can I not search it, I can't sort it, I can't save messages. I have a choice, keep or delete. And I feel like email's worked pretty well for the past 20 years or so. Why is it kind of backwards now? And why, when do you plan to fix it? And really, why was it not prioritized in terms of making communication efficient? Why does it still not work?
So it's actually interesting how this has evolved, because we weren't planning on having it be an email competitor or anything like that. And a lot of the utilities that we offer on Facebook are just supposed to be very simple ways of people sharing and communicating information. So the simplest, of course, is poke, right? It's just this binary thing. You poke, right? Done. Messaging is also set up to be a very simple thing. And we found this really interesting case that just people used it for an increasing amount of things. And people actually, the use of it is starting to approach a use like email, like what you're talking about. So I think in the near future, it will be important for us to build the things that you're talking about. But the reason why we hadn't worked on it so much until now is largely because of where it came from.
But you will be fixing it.
Well, I think it's something that we'll need to do, yeah.
Okay, agreed.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right. So I'm sorry to torture you all for an hour. Jesus.
You guys should feel bad.
Seriously. Are you saying anything in my defense here? All right. So, Mark, is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, I mean, I don't think that this has been that painful.
I actually thought it was going well.
No, I mean, I think that these are really interesting trends to watch. I mean, I'm glad we got a chance to talk about some of this stuff, because I think a lot of what people talk about around the company is just around this corporate stuff, valuation, not necessarily the stuff that we care about. But I think it's important to focus on the trends and the things that are going on in the world. And this is a good conference to do that at, because I mean, a lot of the people here are engineers, artists, designers, and you guys are really the ones who are out here doing the work to do this. So anyhow, thank you guys for all coming. Thanks.